The protests and uprisings that have shaken autocratic governments and monarchies across the Middle East and North Africa took a deadly turn in Libya when Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, in power for 41 years, directed his military to suppress peaceful demonstrators against his regime. The violence used to silence the anti-Gaddafi protesters resulted in a full-scale armed rebellion, with many of Gaddafi's army officers and soldiers defecting to the rebel side. But after an initial rout of government forces that put the rebel army within striking distance of Libya's capital, Tripoli, the insurgents have lost territory to Gaddafi troops and have been in retreat to the point where they may soon be forced to make a last stand in their eastern stronghold of Benghazi. For the most part, the U.S. and other nations have stood by and watched the conflict unfold, unwilling to impose the no-fly zone over Libya that the rebels' Transitional National Council has requested. While France has recognized the council as Libya's legitimate government, other nations have not followed. Despite the endorsement of a no-fly zone by the Arab League, the UN Security Council is divided on the issue. But current UN consideration of the measure and additional economic and political sanctions may come too late for the rebels. Between the lines, Scott Harris spoke with Ali Abdullatif Amida, professor and chair of the Department of Political Science at the University of New England. Professor Amida, who was born in Libya and studies the history of anti-colonial resistance in North Africa, examines the calls for Western powers to militarily intervene in the conflict and provides a profile of Libya's opposition movement.
Your listeners should know that the vast majority of the Libyan people would be against any military intervention. This has to do with their own history in the 20th century, where Libyan society endured one of the most brutal colonization, and 500,000 Libyans perished during that time between 1911 and 1943 because of the nature of Italian colonialism, especially under the fascists, who really were very brutal, and thousands of Libyans died there. So the first thing is we have to be aware of the fact most Libyans will not like military intervention. However, the International Libyan Council and many, many Libyans who are leading this uprising, and many of us, either American citizens or people living abroad, I think in agreement with them, there are other things could be done. The no-fly zone is one thing. Arming and giving aid and medicine to the liberated regions is very crucial. But also reigning on some Arab governments like Algeria and Syria and Yemen, and some West African countries like Chad, Niger, Mali, who are sending supporters and mercenaries to fight for Gaddafi there as well.
Professor Amida, if the international community does not enforce a no-fly zone quite soon, are the rebel forces in danger of being routed here and driven into the desert? Or what are your concerns about the next few days or weeks in this conflict?
We know that the regime will do anything to stay in power. This is the mentality and the psyche of Gaddafi's regime and his circle of followers in Tripoli. I could see a disaster. I could see massacre using the air force and tanks to pound the eastern region and the other towns that rebelled against him. However, I think the fact that many officers and many soldiers defected, many diplomats defected from the regime and joined the uprising, it tells me that this is not inevitable. If aid and arms were given to undiplomatic recognition and pressure, keeping the pressure, the fact that now the regime lost legitimacy inside Libya, that the Arab League also took the legitimacy from the regime, the fact that there is worldwide condemnation, and also our own Obama administration should, in coordination with the Arab League, to have a legal mechanism to give aid, give arms, and also impose non-fly zone and isolate the regime.
The Libyan opposition groups are comprised of many factions, I'm sure. But I wondered if you would give us your best guess as to what a new government of opposition groups would possibly look like if they were to defeat Gaddafi and take power in the nation of Libya.
Well, right now, we have a coalition. The leaders are the foot soldiers who really are daring and they throw their lives, are the youth, middle-class youth who are educated. And the council now is led by 30 members who represent professionals, intellectuals, judges, even the religious figures are not really extremists, and they have a vision and agreement so far on democratic, pluralistic Libya that has constitution, that has recognition of the international law and organization, and awareness that Libya, one of the richest in Africa and has one of the highest literacy rates in Africa, needs a long, long way to go to rebuild the country. And many of the leaders, which is very, very interesting, Scott, there are people who were either educated or they were working for the regime. Some of them were ministers in Gaddafi's regime. They were the most respected and reformers among his elite. And they are the one who are looked at favorably by most people in Libya. The irony of what's going on in Libya, many Libyans, even though they didn't like the regime, they said maybe we could reform it peacefully without losing lives, without destroying the country. But because they were pushed in a corner, they reached a dead end, and they realized that you cannot reform a regime like this because we tried and we failed. Now it's time for us to try to topple the regime and rebuild a new system.
That was Ali Abdullatif Amida, professor and chair of the Department of Political Science at the University of New England. He is the author of The Making of Modern Libya, State Formation, Colonization, and Resistance.